Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome into World Soccer Talk, Soccer Morning. We are running just a bit late on a Monday. Won't go into the reasons why, but it gives us an opportunity to straight into a Premier League review with our friend Kristen Henege. He is on the line with us now. Follow him on Twitter at K-H-E-N-E-A-G-E. Kristen, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you, Jason. How are you?
I'm well. I imagine you're still processing everything that we got from this particular opening weekend of the Premier League season. Some surprises thrown up, and I suppose we should start with the biggest surprise. West Ham doing a number on Arsenal at the Emirates. Peter Cech, not the best in his debut, Kristen.
No, he wasn't. And, you know, we already, as you said, there's been a lot of discussion on the Premier League in general, but specifically the kind of capitulation of Arsenal at home. And I think I was discussing this with a friend last night, and the conclusion I came to is actually, if you think about it, Chelsea and Arsenal play very different styles of football in terms of Chelsea like to sit a little bit deeper, and I think there's a lot less for Cech to do in terms of decision making. He's expected to stop shots and do kind of almost what we consider the basics of goalkeeping, which I think he is exceptional at. But when he hasn't played as much recently and he's being forced to make quite bold decisions like, do I run forward and try and collect that cross? Or do I stay on my goal line and hope that it comes towards me? That's where I think he possibly falls down. It's a bit like the situation we used to see with Ben Foster many years ago, where he would excel at Watford and we would think, wow, Man United have this great young English goalkeeper that will probably be there for a decade. You then transplant him into that Manchester United side and he tends to struggle. Why? Because he's having to do less and he's having to make kind of more decisions. And it's a different mentality goalkeeping from a lesser team to a bigger team. And in the case of Cech, it's a different mentality coaching from Chelsea to Arsenal, from one big team to another, because they play such different styles of football.
It's an interesting theory. I hadn't considered that. I mean, you know, I imagine that even a seasoned professional like Petr Cech could have some nerves on opening day playing for a club like Arsenal, whether you come from Chelsea or not.
Well, of course, I think that's something to consider as well, is that after all, Cech is human, and much of the kind of discussion this summer has been about how influential he's going to be for them, how he's going to elevate them to this new level. And I think the phrase is win them points on his own, 12 to 15. That's a lot of pressure to put on a goalkeeper. And I think as well, you know, it's one of the things that I never really envied the goalkeepers I played with as a kid, because if you make a mistake, chances are a goal's been scored. It's unlike any position on the field. If you're a defender, midfielder, attacker, if you make a mistake, it's fairly likely that a teammate can fix it for you or cover up. It's very rare that happens for a goalkeeper. And I think the thing is, with the opening weekend, we often try and make huge, broad kind of brushstrokes at the end of it. And that's understandable, because as football fans, we like to analyse everything. The truth is, this is a quarter of a month of the season in terms of the 9 months that will follow. So it's really next to nothing in the context of the bigger picture.
No, certainly not. This doesn't mean that Arsenal won't be title contenders. It doesn't mean that Chelsea is going to struggle at home, where they've traditionally been fantastic. Obviously, you know, everyone's got a bit of rust, and the window still has 3 weeks left in it. Kristen, so we don't even know if these are the way these teams are going to look for the bulk of the season. But I guess what we should come to is just in the small picture that we've got from the weekend, should Arsenal be concerned about their inability to put the ball in the net?
I think they have a good right to. I mean, look, that's another one of the kind of standard discussion topics with Arsenal fans, is Giroud good enough? Unsurprisingly, a lot of fans said that is not the case after Sunday. And I wonder how much of that was fueled by first day frustration. The talk that they're interested in Karim Benzema, and that's someone they're looking to do a deal for, I think will placate those concerns somewhat and, you know, appease those fans who are frustrated. I think that they do need a striker of Benzema's ilk if they want to challenge for the top, because I'm not convinced of Giroud. I've never really been that sold on him to do it consistently enough. I think he's a very good player with moments of world-class performance. But the problem is, you need someone who's consistently like that week in, week out. And I think Giroud is not that person. The problem is as well, is that I think the majority of football fans in England, if there is any problem at their football club, the go-to response is, we should sign X, Y, and Z. It's very rare, and we discussed this before, you and I, It's very rare that football fans say, actually, we should try and coach through this problem. Mm-hmm. We should maybe not loan out Chupa Akpom to Hull City. We should maybe put him in there and see if we can work with him. We should see if there's a system change we could do to put Giroud in a better position to score goals. And that's the unfortunate thing, is that everything is solved by spending more money. And I think that, yes, it's very easy to forge the idea that Arsenal should go and buy Karim Benzema, but perhaps there's a style change that's required in there as well.
Well, I think it's also this, the human predilection towards imagining. We fill in that hole that is the future with dreams of, you know, fantastic success. So you sign a new player from another club, perhaps one where they're excelling, and you know that you plug them straight into your club, and all of a sudden we're great. Rather than, as you said, coaching through a problem, making a tactical switch, maybe bringing through a player who hasn't yet gotten a chance to make his mark yet, who's already with the club. It's the same thing with youth players, Christian. We look at these 18, 17, 16 year olds here in the States, and we go, "Oh, they're going to be fantastic," but that's only because we don't know what the future holds yet. And we fill that in with all this wonderful success.
Of course. And I think, you know, you look at West Ham and credit to Slaven Bilic. He's put Reece Oxford in a position to succeed. He's given him an opportunity and said he believes in him. That is one of the biggest obstacles that a youth player in the Premier League faces, is being given that opportunity in the first team, because games are seen as invaluable, points can't be dropped. I hear a lot about the young players at Arsenal, the likes of Serge Gnabry, Gideon Zillerland, the US youth international, Chuba Akpom, who we touched on there. I hear a lot about them, but I don't really see them in what I would constitute competitive games. It's great giving them opportunities in the Capital One Cup, excuse me. But the problem is that if he loses in that game, Gnabry or Akpom or whoever you choose, realistically, the repercussions aren't that great. And equally, it's not the most competitive standard. I don't think it's the greatest kind of introduction to the Premier League to play them in a competition where they're likely to face League One, maybe League Two, even Championship opposition.
Yeah.
You need to be putting them in the Premier League and saying, okay, I trust this player. I think this player is an important part of our future. Now is the opportunity. There's a host of players that have had to go away from Arsenal. I think Chuck Siniki is the best one. He went to Zolvarahem in Belgium to get football. It's great performing in the elite development squads, but the truth is you have to then build a pathway for these players to the first team. And at the minute, perhaps even for the last few years, I'm just not sure if Wenger's done that for every young talent they've had. Certainly guys like Bellerin have had that opportunity, but I think possibly he could be doing more.
So it doesn't mean that Arsenal should be written off. It doesn't mean Chelsea should be written off, a 2-2 draw with Swansea. It doesn't mean Manchester United, who struggled, I think, to beat Spurs based on what I saw and needed an own goal, although you imagine Rooney would have finished that opportunity, Christian. But still, it's not as though United was rampant over Spurs at home. So, but at the same time, you can imagine a club like West Ham or Swansea taking some real hope, and Watford against Everton, I think, is probably in that category as well, taking some real hope for their prospects out of these games.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, look, it's a bit like the old Miles Davis quote. It's not about the bum note that you hit. It's about the note that you hit afterwards. That's the important one. And I think for the teams that struggled, it's about how you respond to that. I think in the case of the promoted teams, I mean, you touched on Watford there, I think they've realised actually they're more than comfortable in this league, that on their day, they can easily compete. They have a wealth of experience in there. Valon Barami, Etienne Capoue, Miguel Layón, who, you know, popped up with a fantastic goal. And so they shouldn't be concerned. Equally, that strike force, the championship through that they had last season, there was a little bit of tentative concern that they may not be able to have to step up. I thought they were fantastic, the three of them, typified by Igalo's goal. I thought he showed immense composure to kind of keep it on the deck and then fire it in. So that's what you're trying to clean from the first week. Are the teams able to compete, the ones that have come up, and those who maybe struggled last season near the bottom, how have they performed? To be honest, I thought some of them looked incredibly slow and quite sluggish, which is a real concern for a first day of the season. equally then at the top, for the teams that, that performed, I think Manchester United, now they've still got a few years to go, but they seem a fairly good team. And as for Chelsea, again, it's that first day start and the idea that they may not be as infallible as they thought they were in preseason.
Where else are you looking? You have City opening up today at West Brom. That's, you know, a chance, I suppose, considering the other results that we've seen, for City to make a statement about themselves and their title aspirations. Again, not drawing any broad conclusions about one match, but, you know, when you consider that Arsenal has lost, when you consider that Manchester United struggled a bit, when you consider Chelsea drew at home, here's City, and if they really put it on West Brom, they can sort of proclaim themselves maybe the leaders at the beginning of the year.
Well, I think momentum is a big part of any title race. And any opportunity you can have to establish an early one and give yourself a real jolt of momentum, you have to take. And that's essentially, as you said there, what City have the opportunity to do this evening against West Brom. The problem is that really, I would hate to be trying to face a Tony Pulis side at home for them that seems quite settled now. He's had opportunities with this team. He's had some time with them. They're kind of settled in what they want to do. I'm personally expecting quite a big season from Christian Gamboa, the Costa Rican fullback, who I think will give Pulis exactly what he wants on both ends of the ball. And, you know, it's a shame in some ways that Salomon Rondon won't be signed in time for the game. But there's more than enough in that West Brom side to concern Man City. And yet equally, such as the kind of Jekyll and Hyde that has been City at times, you could see them going there and rolling over West Brom. Again, it's a big moment for Sterling as well, because I think for him, he thought he was in the magnifying glass at Liverpool. It's going to be even fiercer now at Manchester City just because of his transfer fee alone. So, as you say, it's that opportunity to establish momentum, and I think that's what City will want to do. Sometimes it isn't just about the win. Sometimes it's about the performance as well.
We focus on the title contenders, the teams that will be in the mix for Champions League spots. Certainly, maybe a tier below that in the case of a Spurs, who are always interesting. There's always the drama at Newcastle. Will they be a team that will face a relegation fight this year? Will they be mid table? Where are they going to end up? Southampton and Newcastle, with a 2-2 draw, by the way, at St. James's Park. The promoted sides, Christian, these are teams that are going to need every single point they can scrape together just to maintain their position in the Premier League next season. And, you know, we talked about Watford already, and you said they obviously feel as though they could compete at this level with what they've got. But the other two promoted sides are losers at home. That's probably, you know, and not against great competition either. Not the way they want to start.
Yeah, I thought Bournemouth were really taught a hard lesson. That's the best way I can put it. And it's kind of one of those things that's etched into the rule book of the Premier League for teams that come up, is that mistakes will be punished. And if you're going to allow Rudy Gisted a free header, you're likely to concede a goal. Now, the frustrating thing, I imagine, if you're Eddie Howe, is that you faced Rudy Gisted before. He was at Blackburn last season, was powering headers nigh on every week. So you should have been aware of that. Equally, they missed some really good chances. Dan Gosling, quite early on in front of goal. That falls back to that kind of standard rule book of, if you miss chances, you will be punished in the Premier League. I think for Norwich, I felt a little bit sorry for them, because some refereeing decisions didn't really go their way. And I don't like to criticise referees, because I think they have an incredibly hard job, and putting them under kind of that, you know, dissecting light isn't really the best thing for their careers. But I could see why Alex Neil was frustrated, the fact that their equalising goal was chalked off for a high foot one. Really, I saw similar last season with Graziano Pelle against QPR. They then had a penalty claim that I thought had some justification in being given, that wasn't given. And then, you know, on the flip side of that, someone like Kabay pops up in the last minute and puts the game away, and you're questioning, you know, how fair this league is on the opening day. And I think for Norwich, they can feel a little bit hard done by. Whereas I think Bournemouth have to kind of console themselves with the fact that they made the mistakes that cost them the game ultimately, and that they're going to have to address them quickly. And the fact that I think there was only one starter that was different from their Championship side, Joshua King, who signed from Blackburn in the off-season. Maybe it's time to bring in some of those new guys. Their signings have been quite interesting in terms of they brought Lee Tomlin from Middlesbrough, they brought Max Cradle from Saint-Étienne, and formerly of Leeds. There's maybe not as much in the spine of the team in terms of upgrades there that I would have liked to. So you look at someone like Watford, for example, they've brought Kapu, who we touched on, Berami, players that have played in the Premier League, have experience, and I think are quite significant upgrades and will give you a little bit of kind of athleticism that you need in this league to really cover the ground. I don't see that in Bournemouth's midfield. I don't see as much of the ground covers, the water carriers, if you will, and that's a concern for them moving forward.
We'd be remiss if we didn't share some thoughts and talk a little bit about Liverpool and their start to the season. Clearly, the Raheem Sterling drama dragging out through much of the summer. He moves on to City. There's questions over whether or not they have enough up front now. Kristen, what did you make of their 1-0 win away to Stoke?
The king is dead. Long live the king, I think, is the quickest thing you can come from that. No sooner is Sterling gone, Coutinho pops up with an absolutely fantastic goal. I could see him being very influential for them this season. I think he's a wonderful player. He just needs to put it together more consistently. You know, Jordan Henderson said afterwards he wasn't surprised by that last-minute winner. And, you know, upon reflection, I can see why, because in fairness, he did it a few times last season against Southampton, against Manchester City. So it's not new ground for him. It's just making it so he performs more consistently for that team. And I think watching them yesterday, there was kind of a split between the forward line seemed to have some kind of understanding already. It wasn't perfect. I think it needed a little bit of refinement. But between Firmino and Henderson and Benteke, you could see little bits of link-up. But I think as the season goes on, as they understand each other better as individuals, the team will improve. Now, the concern is that the defence, while it kept a clean sheet, wasn't perfect. It looked a little bit uncertain at times. Joe Gomez, who I thought did very well to come in and play against a very seasoned veteran in John Walters, had little moments where, on a different day, his attempt to clear the ball rolls across the box to a striker and they can see that doesn't nicely fall to his teammate. And that's the concern, is that even now, even with the experience they have in Martin Skrtel and Dejan Lovren in the centre, they don't really ooze that calmness that you want from your centre of defence. And again, it goes back to that discussion we were having at the top of the programme there. Is it a case of going out and buying someone new, right, or do you try and coach through the problems? Yeah. And I think, realistically, he has to coach through the problems, because I can't see him being allowed to go and spend another 20, 25 million on a centre-back. And equally, you ask who he would buy, because that market is very kind of small at the moment. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Rodgers fixes that, because I think if anything's going to let him down this season, I think it'll be the defence. I don't see it being the attack. If anything, I think the attack could find a midpoint between where it was at last season and where it was at during the Suarez, his last season, when they just tore through teams as if they were tissue paper.
So nearly one round of games in the Premier League done. West Brom hosting Manchester City today. It will finish out this first round of matches. The best part about talking to Kristen Hennage is that we can go from the Premier League and the opening weekend and all of that in excellent analysis directly into MLS. And Kristen, you know, we had quite the interesting weekend. The LA Galaxy debut, Giovanni Dos Santos in a win. The Sounders are still terrible. They didn't have Clint Dempsey due to injury. But I want to talk a bit about this New York Red Bulls, New York City FC game, particularly because, look, the Red Bulls are a good side. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They have the look of a real contender after a big philosophy switch, and they sort of stand in opposition to what's going on across the river with NYCFC in their first year. They bring in Pirlo. They bring in Lampard. They obviously have David Villa. There's no question about David Villa right now, but Pirlo and Lampard, not adjusting as well as perhaps we would expect, or certainly the way that NYCFC fans would expect.
No, exactly. And I think that's been typified in the derby matches. It's a big concern for New York City FC, because they've invested a lot of money in these three designated players, and they're not meshing well as a team. And the wider picture is, I see a lot of fans kind of look to Kwadwo Poku and say, oh, you know, he can be that enforcer. He can be the legs or the Touré, if you will, that midfield needs to give it some energy, to give it some ball carrying ability. I don't think he can perform that for 90 minutes. I don't think he has the stamina in him to do it. I think he's a little bit more than perhaps the impact sub that Jason Christ has made in this season. Interestingly, he's the only sub to, I think, create 11 key chances in as coming on as a sub. So it does back up the idea that he's an impact player. But I would like to see him given a bit more time on the field, because I think he's better than that. But as you say, it's that kind of real stark contrast between New York Red Bulls, who, funnily enough, have ditched their star names in Thierry Henry and Tim Cahill, have lost those guys and become significantly better, while New York seem to scrabble around and struggle with it. But the problem is that, look, they're an expansion side. They're very much feeling their way through. A lot of people say, is this a Jason Christ side? I'm inclined to say arguably not, because he's not making all of the decisions. And the truth is that if you're not making all the decisions, how can it ever really be your side? The fact that the club did want a younger DP and were told to sign Andrea Pirlo, there's competing ideas here that have to be allowed to coexist, and that is Andrea Pirlo was a wonderful footballer, a truly talented, you know, generation-defining footballer. He is also not the best fit for this current New York City FC side. Now, I was speaking to a fan last night who said, well, the problem isn't Lampard. The problem isn't Pirlo, excuse me. It's Lampard. They shouldn't have signed Lampard. And I agree with that to an extent. The problem is that you'd already signed Lampard when you signed Pirlo. So it's not really good enough to say, oh, well, Lampard is the problem. That's who we should be getting rid of. This team, I would say, in the off-season, needs to sit down, really define how they want to play football, who are their key men in the spine of the team, and then what players do they need to make that effective. Realistically, they need enforcers alongside Pirlo. Uh-huh. They need guys who run hard, who have kind of strong physical stats and are able to keep up for the game for 90 minutes. And then equally in the final third, alongside Villa, they need attackers who can create space, because I think that's a problem for them as well, is that players like McNamara, who are, I think, very talented young individuals, aren't creating enough space for him to play in. And so he's struggling to find it. He's dallying on the ball. And as we've seen, he's not a very strong player. So it's quite easy for him to be overcome by the physical nature of Major League Soccer.
Yeah, there's so many things that are working against him. You know, you could imagine, first of all, they had a year plus to build up to this season and to define what they wanted to be, Christian, and they chose, I don't know what they chose to do, essentially to take all their money and give it to three players and imagine, you know, they're filling the seats. And I guess maybe that is even more important in your first season than being a truly good team. But you want to do both, clearly. There are so many variables working against Pirlo being a success in this league that, as you said, I mean, it's sort of like, when does all of that, when is the straw, where's the straw that breaks the camel's back? Instead of imagining, well, we've got Andrea Pirlo, let's make it work, you sort of go, well, this doesn't work for him, and this doesn't work for him, and if you don't have this type of player alongside him, which is a very rare thing indeed in MLS, a truly dominant sort of defensive midfield player who can cover for Pirlo and play ahead of him. I mean, let's be honest, they play sort of circles around Pirlo in the center of midfield. I don't know how you do that.
Well, I think if we look at the Eastern Conference in general, look at the teams that currently sit top, DC United, New York Red Bulls, neither have what I would consider star names in the global sphere of football. You've got Chris Rolfe, a league veteran, who is really kind of running things for DC alongside Fabian Espíndola. For New York Red Bulls, you have Bradley Wright Phillips and Dax McCarthy, I think, typifying that same kind of thing. Sasha Kljestan to Leicester, he obviously is taking up maybe a little bit of a bigger name. But again, these are not star players. These are not guys that you would, see getting $5-6 million. But they're guys that fit the team dynamic. They fit what the team is trying to do. And that's the concern for New York City fans at the minute. They don't really have an identity on the pitch. I think they're doing kind of a lot to try and forge that off the pitch. Some of it less pretty than others, that kind of fighting that we saw, in the pre-match yesterday. But on the field, they do need to kind of define what they want to be. There's a reason I think we've seen a lot of different formations from Christ these last few weeks, and it's because he's having to try and test things out on the pitch in MLS matches to work out what is best for him. He has such a kind of mixed bag of talent. You have players like Angelino, this exciting young fullback prospect. Then you have Iriola, who's a vastly experienced Spanish fullback. And it's just trying to get that to fit in. That was, for me, that was kind of the takeaway from Jason Christ in Real Salt Lake, was how good is that team? You know, the way they pass the ball, that understanding they have. It's hard enough to build an understanding with an expansion squad roster in general. It's even harder when some of the components don't really fit into the holes that you need them to make the team play you want them to.
That's the issue for Jason Christ. And this is why I don't know that he's the best fit for this team. I understand him taking the opportunity and having the chance to go and learn from people in Manchester and be backed by big money. But this is backwards from what he is used to. This is backwards from what he did in Utah, Christian. In Utah, it was, the team is the star. We're going to bring in players who fit what we want to do, which I think is how you're supposed to build a team. In New York, it's very much, okay, here's your group of players. They don't necessarily fit together. Now go win games. And that's got to be strange for him.
Exactly. I mean, it sounds a bizarre statement to say, but, you know, maybe he's looking at Pirlo as his Kyle Beckham. There's players that I think he's trying to shoehorn into similar positions that he had at RSL, and it's just not working. That's the sad truth. And equally, you know, two of your star players, I think, are still adjusting to life in Major League Soccer. Because it is a very different league in terms of what it brings, what it demands of its players. The fact you don't really get a lot of time on the ball. When you do, I think sometimes teams can be quite static, the players ahead of them. And it's a very different league, I think, to what a lot of European players are used to. You also have to factor in that not all of the grass is grass. Some of it is turf. And that, having spoken to English players, is something that you have to get used to as well. The bounce of the ball, all these little nuances that we don't really take in as fans just observing the game. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say it's going to be a very important off-season for them. You look at Orlando City, and to me, they're the team that, you know, has sat down and said, okay, well, how do we want to play? Who do we bring in? Mm-hmm. And not every signing has been great. They've recently just let Martin Patterson go. They had to let Sean St. Ledger go. They've cut players. But they've also forged some kind of identity, so you know how they play, you know how they work. And then through that, they've had a little bit of fortune with Kyle Lamb kind of bursting onto the scene. Mm-hmm. But that then falls into the idea of being quite good scouting. Mm-hmm. They've done really well to scout Laren and say, look, we should take him. I'm not sure if NYCFC are doing enough on those fronts at the minute to do that and make the most of it. And that's, for me, where they have to improve. They have to improve in terms of getting the players that they want for the way that they want to play.
I think we're running out of time. We're out of time here, Christian. But I think it's interesting to look at the very different environments that Pirlo and Lampard are stepping into in New York versus what Steven Gerrard and Giovanni Dos Santos, to a lesser extent, because he's a younger player with a lot more time left ahead of him, but to see what Gerrard is stepping into, a very established team that knows how it wants to play. And even if Steven Gerrard's not a perfect fit, Bruce Arena is going to find a way to be successful. He's got a great supporting cast. They know who they are. They've won championships. That exudes an incredible amount of confidence that they can feed on. NYCFC is making this all up as they go along, and it is definitely showing on the field.
What I would say is, you look at someone like Mitch Dichter, who's on a lot of money, then look at someone like Sebastien Leger. For me, the hallmark of Bruce Arena has been the ability to find players like Leger, like Juninho, who are arguably on lesser money than they should be and contribute to the team in a significant way. That's, I think, what New York City FC and Jason Christ need to do as well. They need to almost unearth those gems, which is not an easy task. You know, I think it's something we chronically underrate with Bruce Arena, is his ability to find players like Leger and then managed to get performances out of them quite quickly, because he's taken to this league almost effortlessly. And I thought, against Seattle again, he was brilliant. And that's part, I think, of the bigger plan for New York City FC. They need to upgrade their recruitment in terms of not just who they're buying, but who they're giving their money to and how much of that money they're giving them. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, feeds into the wider idea of them getting an academy, making the most of the City partnership and making it so the players they bring over are the players they need. There was talk of Iheanacho coming over from City. Mm-hmm. If I was putting my money on it, I would rather have him than Angelino. And that's not to say Angelino's a bad player, but at the minute, NYCFC need to score goals. So you want to take the striker, you want to take that risk, and someone who I think got really good in preseason, but isn't likely to be good enough to make that breakthrough for City this season.
Yeah, and I've seen some talk about who's been responsible for certain signings, and that's always difficult to tell, especially at an MLS club, but obviously Claudio Reyna has some influence over who they're going after, and the names connected to him aren't the best, so we'll have to see how this plays out. Kristen, I wish we had more time. We do not. Kristen Henege, go follow him on Twitter, K-H-E-N-E-A-G-E. He writes for a bunch of different places. Fantastic coverage of both the Premier League and MLS. Kristen, appreciate the time. Happy Monday. We'll talk to you soon. And there he goes. We actually dropped that call for reasons I do not completely understand, but it doesn't matter because we were done. When we come back, phone lines will be open for you. Here on a Monday edition of Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com. This Sunday, I'll be calling the Philadelphia Union against Chicago Fire game on Rabble.tv. I'd like to invite you to hear my thoughts and analysis live during the game at Rabble.tv. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in too by posting your questions or observations in the comment sections. If you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast and call one of your team's games? It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern for Philadelphia against Chicago on Rabble.tv. The race to win the MLS Supporters Shield and to qualify for the playoffs is heating up, so what better way to enjoy Major League Soccer than by playing one of the most unique fantasy soccer games available with Euro Fantasy League. With EuroFantasyLeague.com, don't be confused by the name. You can play MLS games for free, picking your best MLS starting 11 and subs against like-minded MLS fans such as yourself. Plus, you play in the MLS draft game just like your favorite NFL draft games. As the name suggests, you can also play a different fantasy game by selecting from six of the major European leagues, including the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Ligue 1, the Dutch Eredivisie, and the Portuguese Primeira Liga. So imagine picking a team that can feature the likes of Ronaldo, Aguero, Pogba, Zlatan, Rooney, and Messi, as well as other world-class footballers, with your chance to win prizes, up to $5,000 for the winner of the season prize game. This is your opportunity to show your soccer expertise by playing against other fans from around the U.S. Set up your free fantasy soccer game today at EuroFantasyLeague.com. Again, head on over to EuroFantasyLeague.com.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we go, back on Soccer Morning, Monday edition of the program. Happy to have you along for the ride. Phone lines are open, 646-832-3909. If you haven't written it down or put it in your phone or burned it into your memory, that's the number, 646-832-3909. Let's go to New York and talk to my man Washington. What was it? Number five, right? Right, Washington?
That's right. I am number five. I'm number five. How's it going, Jason?
It's going well. Now, are you going to you want to talk about your team? You want to talk about that game yesterday?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the game, or do you want to talk about what happened before the game? Because I got to address it at some point.
All right. Well, we could talk a little bit about both. I saw the highlight in the news clip this morning about what happened before the game. I was disappointed. You know, we can't be bringing violence. The thing that really bothered me the most was that the news reporter, and I won't say the name, but the news reporter said the hooliganism from Europe is now appearing on our shores or appearing in our local town or something
boom,
like that.
Boom, 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 boom. Washington, this is my – I'm sorry to bum rush you here, but I am extremely passionate about this particular topic. I have said for years, I'm talking going back to the beginning of when I started podcasting and writing about American soccer, my original blog that no one should ever read ever again. The moment American soccer fans start to, we had the West Ham Columbus Crew thing a couple of years back during a friendly.
Yeah, yeah.
The moment American soccer fans start acting like this, it it creates a lot of pressure and a lot of problems for soccer as a whole. It doesn't matter.
I totally agree with
you. It doesn't matter if you're not an NYCFC fan or you're not a Red Bull fan or you're not a hooligan or you're not a thug or you're not one of these people who fights for the fun of it. You're going to be painted with this label. If you're a soccer fan in this country, every mainstream media outlet that covers this story will take the opportunity to say, what's happening with soccer in the United States? And it's bad. It's bad for us. It's bad for the sport.
And here's the thing, though. Here's the good news, Jason. I was at the stadium. And, yes, we took digs at each other, just like the Red Bulls fan took digs at us. But it was all in good fun. Everybody there had a blast. I was right next to the third rail. Those guys are great. We all had a blast. And, of course, we were, shooting zingers at each other. Of course, that's part of the fun. But nobody there had a negative attitude. I mean, no, there were no fights that I saw. Everybody had a great time. And what pisses me off the most is you didn't hear not one piece of that in the news clip this morning. All you heard about was the fight at that bar.
Yeah, and it's disappointing. And look, I saw there's some comments out there. I won't call out the person who made them. You can find them if you want. But there was sort of this intimation by somebody from the New York metropolitan area, from somebody from that part of the world, this intimation that the number of arrests before the game or some sort of clashing between fans is indicative or somehow speaks to the passion and the rivalry. And, oh, now it's a real rivalry because people are getting arrested. That's an incredibly...
That's not the way we measure a rivalry.
Right, exactly.
We measure rivalry by the size of the TIFO. We measure rivalry by the volume of the stadium. We measure rivalry by the score. You don't measure it by how many people get arrested or how many people get into fights.
No, let's not celebrate stupidity. Let's not celebrate stupidity. And by the way, if you're the type of person that goes out to any sporting event, I don't care if it's soccer, football, basketball, women's softball, if you have any intention of getting into a physical altercation with somebody who supports, all they do is support the other team, they're probably just like you. And even if they're not just like you, they like the same things you do because that's why they're there. If your intention is to get into a physical altercation with them, don't go anywhere. Sit at home in the dark by yourself alone and listen to terrible music and punish yourself because you don't deserve to be in public. Anyway, Washington, let's talk about the game. Go ahead.
So here's my issue with Jason Kreis. I mean, your caller, I think, the guy you had before me, before the break, he hit it right in the nose. He's experimenting on the field. Now, I get that, and I also agree with him saying, you know, this is going to be a very important off season. I'm going to give him a pass, and I think he should be given a pass for this season because he really didn't know what he had to work with. He really didn't know, you know, I mean, he started, we're still getting new players every day. I mean, the transfer window just closed, so I get that, right? I understand. He didn't know what was going on. But this off season, he really needs to work things out. He really, now that he knows who he has, he knows what's going on. He needs to work out a plan, a formation, something. Because every single time, and then that defense, man, that defense has got to work hard. Now, I don't want anybody getting, it twisted. I'm NYCFC for life no matter what. But that defense, they've got to learn how to clear the ball. For some reason, he wants to play right on the 18-yard box. I don't know why. Clear the damn ball.
Every single I was doing the Rabble TV broadcast last night, Washington. So you were at the stadium. You obviously weren't listening. I must have said, why can't they clear the ball about 30 times? Why can't they clear the ball? Look, I know we have this notion of playing out of the back, being a little bit more attractive, keeping the ball on the ground, being, evolving our soccer here in this country. And I know Jason Kreis is one of those coaches who wants to play that way. But that doesn't mean you can't kick the ball as hard as you can when you've got four Red Bull players inside the 18-yard box and the ball's bouncing around. Get your foot on the ball. Get it out.
Exactly. Exactly, my man. Look, all in all, even with the scoreline, I had a blast. And the guys that came with me, there were about 10 of us, we had a blast. So just remember that, people. Don't remember the fights. Remember that. Everybody at the stadium had a blast. I got to go, Jason.
All right, there goes Washington. I've got some details here. Subway Rat is telling me what groups it's between. Blah blah blah. Ambushed some supporters during the second. This was retaliation. Okay, I do not care about the details. I understand that we're trying to assign some blame here. Who's responsible for whatever? And I've got somebody on the line. Who's this?
Hi, this is Karen from New Jersey.
Hey, Karen. I'm being told you were a witness to this these shenanigans.
We were up the street, and our friend was behind us watching it. And from what I have heard, the NYCFC supporters particularly walked down that street to that bar looking to pick a fight.
Yeah, and I've heard that that's a Red Bull bar, and obviously this game was at Red Bull Arena, so it was close by. Like, again, I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry, Karen.
It's the Garden State Ultras bar, particularly.
Okay. All right, which is obviously a Red Bull supporter group.
I
know that that stuff matters for determining who's responsible. At the end of the clip that we got from Rob Harris on Twitter, there was a police vehicle that pulled up. So I'm imagining some people were at least detained for a little while, and there was something going on there from the authorities. And I know that stuff matters. But I'm concerned, again, from this general sense that somehow soccer fans in general are going to get labeled as hooligans, people who look for fights. And again, we know that this stuff happens in other sports. The problem, the difference, is that there is something called the Garden State Ultras, that there is something called the Third Rail or whatever, and not that they were involved. I'm just saying these groups, the Empire Supporters Group and all of these things, these people organize, and that gives media an opportunity to put a label on the people responsible for the violence, and it creates a problem for soccer. Just stop doing it. Stop it.
Oh, no, I totally agree. I find difficulty in the New York Post article that today said there were 30 arrests stemming particularly just from the game when the police were out in force yesterday, because there were also several parades going on in Newark and a festival, and people in general were getting arrested yesterday.
Right,
that's the part I think that
the
reporting has been a little sketchy.
And it speaks to the problem, right? If there's a soccer match and there's a fight, which again is bad and shouldn't happen, but let's be honest, there are fights that happen around every sporting event in this country on some level. People get drunk and stupid. It happens. But the difference is that, and you all these other events in the area, because it's soccer and because there are a lot of people in this country who are still quick to label soccer fans as hooligans, that's where the responsibility suddenly lies, with soccer. And it's terrible. Karen, you got any parting words here? I'm going to let you go.
Nope, that's good. Thanks, Jason.
All right, there you go. Appreciate it. I'm being told on Twitter it's important to assign blame. They should be shamed and called out. Okay, and this is being called retaliation. Okay, so the Red Bull fans jumped some NYCFC supporters at the second game, and then at the Yankee Stadium game, and then this was retaliation by the NYCFC supporters towards the GSU. And guys, I mean, again, I guess that stuff matters, and people should be shamed for their behavior. The hooligans. First of all, stop calling yourself hooligans. Stop calling yourself army. Stop calling yourself ultras. Stop calling yourself soldiers. Whatever. I mean, I'm sorry. I feel like I'm a broken record here. I'm going to little palate cleanser with Roberto, who's been very patient. Roberto, you're on the air.
Hey, it's better than being called Barra Brava in South America.
Well, okay, look, and yes, that one should fall under the same heading. And the original DC United fans going back, and there are some people who are no longer with us who were key to the start of that group. They chose a name that was, there was some provocation in the name. I think they probably should have chosen better. It's the difference, though, Roberto, is that for most of us and most of the English speaking part of this country, Barra Brava doesn't have the same meaning as hooligan, and that's not right. It's just the way things are based on the language barrier. But you're right. Barra Brava is just as bad.
Exactly. Let's switch gears and talk about the Premier League now. Firstly, did you enjoy the weekend? The first weekend of the
Roberto just put on his hosting hat. Let's switch gears.
That's what I did.
I enjoyed what I saw. I actually didn't catch any of Arsenal West Ham, but I did watch Chelsea Swansea, which I thought was pretty entertaining. I watched Manchester United Tottenham, which was not all that entertaining, to be honest with you, and a little disappointing in terms of the one goal being scored on just an absolute terrible own goal. But it was a good weekend, I suppose, for the Premier League.
Yeah, I just want to talk about that Chelsea game. Really, I was watching Diego Costa for the entire 90 minutes, and he just looked very off the pace. He was even looked nervous with the fear that his hamstring injury might have been, teared off.
Yeah, I mean, remember, this is a guy with a history of having to come off in, was it the Champions League? He had to come off in like the first 15 minutes because of an injury like this. I mean, I put that onus falls on Mourinho. If they do a fitness test and he's not 100%, I don't care if it's the first weekend of the season, rest him up, because you need a healthy Diego Costa through the bulk of the year. I mean, you can't be messing around with a hamstring. It's the kind of thing that pops up. I mean, look at a player like Jozy Altidore, not to compare the two, but, you know, if you don't properly rest, rehabilitate, and come back from a hamstring injury when you are fully fit, it can reoccur. And this is something that could be chasing him all year.
Exactly, exactly. And it's better to not risk that and play someone like Luke Ramey or Radamel Falcao for that type of match, especially for the next one against Manchester City, which is an important one.
Yeah. Roberto, got any other observations? I got a couple other people I need to take a break as well.
No, it's fine.
All right.
Enjoy your day, Jason.
Here goes Roberto. Good palate cleanser. And let's take a quick break. Got to squeeze one more in before we come back. We'll do another segment of your calls, Bill and Brendan. Hold on. It's Soccer Morning on a Monday. WorldSoccerTalk.com. Don't go anywhere. Be right back. This Sunday, I'll be calling the Philadelphia Union against Chicago Fire game on Rabble.tv. I'd like to invite you to hear my thoughts and analysis live during the game at Rabble.tv. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in, too, by posting your questions or observations in the comment sections. If you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast and call one of your team's games? It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern for Philadelphia against Chicago on Rabble.tv. The race to win the MLS Supporters Shield and to qualify for the playoffs is heating up, so what better way to enjoy Major League Soccer than by playing one of the most unique fantasy soccer games available with Euro Fantasy League. With EuroFantasyLeague.com, don't be confused by the name. You can play MLS games for free, picking your best MLS starting 11 and subs against like-minded MLS fans such as yourself. Plus, you play in the MLS draft game just like your favorite NFL draft games. As the name suggests, you can also play a different fantasy game by selecting from six of the major European leagues, including the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Ligue 1, the Dutch Eredivisie, and the Portuguese Primeira Liga. So imagine picking a team that can feature the likes of Ronaldo, Aguero, Pogba, Zlatan, Rooney, and Messi, as well as other world-class footballers, with your chance to win prizes, up to $5,000 for the winner of the season prize game. This is your opportunity to show your soccer expertise by playing against other fans from around the U.S. Set up your free fantasy soccer game today at EuroFantasyLeague.com. Again, head on over to EuroFantasyLeague.com.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we are back on Soccer Morning, WorldSoccerTalk.com. Kind of been taken over by this Red Bull New York City FC game and some of the events surrounding it. Bill in Queens, you've been very patient. What's up?
Hey, Jason, I know you'd love to talk about anything else other than what happened before the game yesterday, but we do have to talk about it because
we do.
It's a thing not only is a terrible thing, but for a lot of Red Bulls fans, myself included, we can't stand this group either. And this is not an isolated incident with them. This is a smaller group compared to the other two, the Viking Army and the Empire Supporters Club.
Wait, hold on.
Group that in 2011, on a trip to Columbus, jumped two kids in a parking lot because they were wearing crew shirts. This is a group that gay bashed a friend of mine in 2013 to the point that he no longer wanted to be a part of this fan base anymore. It's a group that threw a lit road flare towards the direction of our own goalkeeper last year.
Okay, I think this
group
is also
needs to be banned.
Bill, this is, I believe, is this also the group that refused to take the league's directive about the YSA chant?
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, that was them as well. And like I said, this is not an isolated incident, and I don't want people who listen to the show around the league to think that they are representative of us. Because they're not.
Okay.
That's not what happened yesterday, you know, that happened. Meanwhile, the supporter group that I'm part of, we had a charity event yesterday, and we had New York City fans that were there taking a part of it. Maybe there was a little banter back and forth, but nobody came to blows, and I don't see why we can do that and they can't.
Yeah, you know, okay, Nolan on Twitter is pointing something out. He says, ultras and hooligans are different by definition. Yeah, I understand that, Nolan, and I understand ultras does not always imply violence, but if you take the tradition that's come out of Eastern Europe and Italy, okay. Ultras mean something. You know, it's a
loaded... These guys aren't supporters, Jason. They're agitators. Right, and they're agitators within our own fan base as well. A lot of times they'll break off into whatever they want to do as far as their song is because they don't care about us. When we sing a song in Spanish, they sing Nachos Grande towards us.
I think that what I'm trying to point out is sometimes when these groups take on these names, they are putting themselves, they're separating themselves immediately. They are sending a message that their interest is more in agitation than it is in supporting the team, come hell or high water, by whatever means necessary. And again, this is a league that has been very good about being open-minded, inclusive, and progressive. And let's not change that perception because of a small group of people. Ultras and hooligans are different by definition. This is again from Nolan. The naming concepts aren't the problem. Okay. I understand they're not the main problem, but they are certainly about intention. Example, Timbers Army is a great group. This is true. But the Timbers Army existed prior to MLS. They created themselves and then worked very hard to get a sense of community around that group that is not about, you know, and again, Sounders and Portland fans have had run-ins. Just think about some of the groups that call themselves ultras. That group down in San Jose, what is it, 1806 ultras? I'm just saying. Bill,
Jason, you could call yourself the unicorn and puppy brigade. And if you go out and start fights with people on the street, then you deserve to be banned.
Absolutely, this is true. The name doesn't matter, you know, to the actions. I mean, in comparison to the actions, I'm just pointing out again that we have a streak here. And this is the part that the rest of us have to be vigilant about, Bill. And you're doing that here this morning. And I imagine you'll do that within the Red Bull community. But we have, you know, the name sort of announced the intention of a streak of people who choose to be more about aping what they've seen in Europe occasionally, what they've seen in a movie or what they've seen from the 80s. Than actually being soccer fans, and that's a travesty.
All right, cool, Jay. Thanks for taking my call.
Here goes Bill. All right, good stuff from Bill. Let's talk to Brendan in Cali, who I imagine, well, it says NYC Derby, but I don't know if that's about the hooligans or not, Brendan.
Yeah, you know, I'm just calling from the home of the five-time MLS Cup champs, LA Galaxy. You know, I'm just calling about our New York friends. I can't remember how many MLS Cups they have over there between the two clubs. I can't remember. Is that zero? I can't remember. But regardless, you know, I think, you know, the Red Bulls also have to be called out on this a little bit. Not necessarily with the hooliganism, but just, you know, this whole preseason was kind of consumed by, you know, Red Bull out, Mike Petke, bring Petke back, and, you know, that uproar. And I'm not hearing any noise about that anymore. I wonder why. I guess, winning really does cure all woes. So, you know, kind of surprised by that. And then, you know, the other thing is it just seems that the two supporters groups we've been having problems with is NYCFC and Orlando City, you know, throughout. Can't forget, you know, kind of through preseason and the beginning of season, Orlando City was a real problem as well. So I think these are definitely people learning how to be soccer fans here in this country, because it's really hard to be a hooligan in this country with the amount of travel. I mean, there's no way these guys... Are they going to travel to Colorado to pick fights? I mean, how's that going to work? It's going to be difficult to get up to Vancouver, you know?
Yeah, I mean, again, it sort of just paints you paint yourself into a corner here. You state your intentions with your name. Again, that doesn't necessarily mean you're bad people if you call yourself ultras or hooligans, but I think it does indicate sort of where your initial mindset is. Certainly your stance. You know, it's an aggro stance versus sort of, hey, we're just here to be fans and cheer together and sing the same songs and create TIFO versus, hey, we're here to be, you know, hey, we're going to defend our club, blah, 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 blah. No, you just want to be a fight. You just want to be in a fight. You just want to be a dick. Stop being a dick. Appreciate the call, Brendan. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, take care, man. Yeah, thanks.
All right. We are essentially done here on a Monday. Good stuff from Kristen Hennage. Now, I did have some headlines I didn't get a chance to get to this morning because of our delay. I just want to touch on a couple of those. The phone lines will remain open, 646-832-3909, just for a couple more minutes. But just let's run through some of these storylines that I didn't get to. We mentioned some of the MLS events. Didn't really get a chance to talk about the LA Galaxy beating Seattle 3-1. Giovanni Dos Santos scoring in his debut. That's obviously the noteworthy event there. Clint Dempsey did not play, picked up a hamstring injury, and was out. Chad Barrett scores in the first minute of the game and then pulls his hamstring celebrating that goal. It was all downhill from there for the Sounders. Bruce Arena and company getting a home win and continuing to build on what they've got. Now that these rosters are stable for the most part, I think the Sounders could still somehow manage to squeeze Roman Torres into their team. There's lots of rumors swirling around. I don't know where that stands. But beyond that, and the chance that a couple players will come in as free transfers out of contract, we are seeing what will be these teams down the stretch. And the Galaxy look very tough. The Rebels look very tough. I don't know what DC United is. They get a 1-0 victory over Montreal. They take one shot. They score. On the road, very different than what they've been at RFK. Saborillo's influence not necessarily felt in this game. Are they going to be a scrapping team who scrapes with 1-0 wins? Or are they going to be a team that can score 3 or 4 goals when they need to? It's difficult to say. Sporting, very good over Toronto FC, despite the fact they're missing Dwyer and Zusi and some other key players. It's Bielsa watch time. Marcelo Bielsa has stepped away from Marseille, submitting his resignation over the weekend. And now there is open speculation that he will take that Mexico job. We'll see. He obviously has a history in Mexico, started his managerial career on the club level there. So we'll be watching that. Mexico under Bielsa could be an absolute tire fire. It could be amazing on the field. We'll have to see. Neymar has the mumps and is out for 2 weeks. That could have an impact on Pedro and whether or not he moves on anytime soon. Remember, the transfer window in Europe stays open, or at least in England, where Pedro is rumored to go, until August 31st. So a possibility of him still ending up, say, in a Manchester United shirt. And finally here, much props to the fans of Chattanooga FC, who showed up to their NPSL final match against Cosmos B to the tune of 18,227 people. Unbelievable support from Chattanooga for their team. Now, ultimately, Chattanooga FC lost that game 3-2, so congratulations go out to Cosmo B and head coach Aleko Eskandarian, who wins his first title in his coaching career. But that is that's amazing stuff from the people in Tennessee. We had a call last week. I took a call last week from somebody in Chattanooga talking about this. It's a phenomenon. What it means for the future of soccer in Chattanooga, I don't know yet. But, you know, let's just take a moment and celebrate that 18,000 people showed up to an amateur soccer match, National Professional Soccer League. Is that what it is? No, it's National. What does NPSL stand for, Trevor? It just flat out National Premier Soccer League. Yeah, of course, the Premier's in there. It's the equivalent of USL level stuff, the USL Development Division. All right, USL. PDL. That's what I meant to say. All right. That's it. Thanks very much for the calls, guys. You've all been brilliant. We have one more. Should I squeeze in one more? Yes? No? Confirmed? Denied? No. All right. We'll take this out. Thanks to Christian Henege for joining us to talk Premier League and MLS. Thanks to all you guys who called in, and Karen in Jersey as well. Can't forget her. Don't be a hooligan. Don't be an ultra. Just be a fan. We'll talk to you guys later. Bye.